I grew up in a small town that was surrounded by forest, and I guess that's where my love for the wild started. My old man used to take me out hunting when I was just a kid. He'd say, "Nature is the best teacher," and he wasn't wrong. I learned to track, to shoot, and most importantly, to respect the woods and what lives in them. After high school, I took jobs that kept me outside. Park ranger, guide, you name it. Met my wife at a wilderness first aid course. She was as into the wild as I was, maybe more. We hit it off immediately. Fast forward a few years, and we're the couple that spends anniversaries camping instead of at fancy resorts. We've hiked trails you've probably never heard of, and our idea of a good time involves being out in the dirt. Our trip to Rocky Mountain National Park was supposed to be just another mark on our trail map. We'd planned a week camping out in the backcountry. The log cabin we found wasn't part of the plan, but things like that, the unexpected, they're what make a trip memorable. Little did we know that cabin would turn our usual adventure into something out of a campfire horror story. So, here's what happened. We were about 3 hours into our hike when we came across this old log cabin, complete with a wood stove and iron kettle. Clearly, hunters or hikers had used it as an outpost at some point, but it looked like it had been abandoned for quite some time. We decided to make camp there because the roof was still intact, and the fireplace would provide us warmth throughout the night. We still set up our tents inside for extra protection from the elements. The sun set quickly after we arrived, and within minutes it was pitch black outside, save for our flashlights. My wife became tired early on, so she retired to her sleeping bag while I sat up by the fire reading a book. Around midnight, something very strange happened. I started hearing this sound coming from just beyond the tree line. It sounded like someone banging on a pot lid repeatedly. Now obviously, the sound of metal isn't something you expect to hear when you're out this far. And then I heard what sounded like metal chains being dragged across rocks. After that, all hell broke loose. It seemed like every animal in that forest went berserk. There were growls and yelps from wolves, howling screeches from bobcats or cougars, hooting owls, everything you could imagine. And then there were these other sounds that defied explanation. One noise came from directly outside. It sounded like somebody rubbing their hands together, only really fast. Sort of like clapping your hands without actually making them touch. Then there was another noise. One unlike anything else I have ever heard before or since. A long drawn-out hiss followed by this weird whining noise that kind of reminded me of nails scratching against glass. Finally, things settled down again, and silence fell over everything. My wife had stirred a bit while it was all happening, but never fully woke up, so I let her sleep. Me? I felt so creeped out that I couldn't sleep until dawn. When morning came, my wife emerged first. She told me she had not slept well at all during the night, because something kept tapping on the outside of our tent. She also told me she heard strange noises coming from deep within the woods. I was a bit reluctant to tell her about my own experience, but I eventually did anyway. She looked at me in a way that made me know I had made a grave mistake in not telling her. She wanted to move on from the area as fast as possible. After we packed up our gear and were ready to head back down into civilization, we decided to take a quick look around. By now we had calmed a bit, and so had the forest, so we were feeling more relaxed. The strangest thing I noticed right away was that there were no animal tracks anywhere near our campsite. No deer tracks, no wolf prints, nothing. Even with all that racket, there was no signs of anything. Then about 10 yards behind the outpost, we discovered an old rusty barrel. My wife walked over and kicked at it gently to see if anything was inside. As soon as she did this, several things happened simultaneously. Firstly, the lid flew off, and secondly, hundreds upon hundreds of beetles came crawling out. And finally, at that very same moment, a crow cawed directly above us, which scared the living crap out of both of us. The inside of the barrel contained not only more beetles, but some sort of gooey red substance too. So, the red goo in the barrel and the beetles had us both frozen for a moment. My wife, always the braver one, took a closer look and realized the substance was some kind of fermented berry mix. Wild animals must have been attracted to the scent and somehow knocked the barrel over long ago. spilling its contents and leaving it as an open buffet for insects. We laughed off the crow's timing as a weird coincidence, but we couldn't shake off the night's events. Eager to leave, we started our hike back, but not before marking the cabin on our GPS. Curiosity would bring us back someday. We were sure of it. Halfway through our hike back, we stopped for water and ran into a couple of park rangers. We shared our experience from the night before, expecting them to laugh it off. Instead, one of them turned pale. He explained that years ago, there was an old ranger who lived in that cabin. He was a bit of a hermit and had a reputation for being into some strange stuff, rituals and the like, trying to communicate with the spirits of the forest. The other ranger chimed in, saying they often heard weird noises around that area. They figured it was just the wind or the trees settling, but sometimes they'd find dead animals near that barrel, arranged in patterns that didn't seem natural. They had planned to clean the area up, but never got around to it. My wife and I exchanged a look. Could it be that the old ranger's attempts at communication had left something lingering, something that stirred up the animals? The thought was dismissed as quickly as it came. We were both rational people, after all. On our way back, we talked about everything except for what had happened. Instead, we planned our next adventure, vowing to stick to well-known trails for a while. A few days after getting home, I did some research. Turns out, there's a phenomenon called sound mirroring in forests, where certain frequencies get reflected off the dense trees, creating all kinds of auditory illusions. That might explain the noises. And the animals? Maybe they sensed our fear, or there was a predator we didn't see that stirred the pot. As for the hissing and whining noises, maybe it was just the old cabin settling in ways we weren't familiar with. Or maybe it was the wind whistling through hidden crevices, mimicking the haunting sounds of a bygone era. We haven't been back to that cabin since, but it's there, on our GPS, waiting for us. Maybe one day, when the memory isn't so fresh, we'll return. Maybe we'll find that old ranger's notes, uncover the truth about the barrel, the animals, and those ungodly sounds. I never thought that something like what happened to me could happen in real life. It sounds so bizarre, and even though it did not seem possible at the time, I am convinced that what my friend and I experienced was a real Bigfoot. My name is Lori, and I am from Grand Rapids, Michigan originally, but now live near Newaygo, Michigan, with my husband and our two grown children on 20 acres of wooded land. My best friend Mandy lives about a mile away from us with her boyfriend Mark. Mandy called me one day and said she had found some strange footprints outside her house, which is pretty much surrounded by woods. She described them as huge human prints, or maybe gorilla prints, because they were almost twice the size of hers. We got together later that night around dusk and decided we would try to follow these tracks into the woods using flashlights. The guys were hanging out over at my house and thought we were being ridiculous, acting like two Nancy Drews or something. So we start off following these big-ass prints, when all of a sudden we notice that there's another set mixed in that looked more like normal human boot prints going along with them. We figured someone must be playing games out here, since it seemed too weird for words. As we followed the trail deeper into the forested area, where no one ever goes except deer hunters during the season, things started getting stranger still. Suddenly there were no more tracks, but instead lots of little footprints running every which way all over. And then those stopped too before starting up again further ahead. We were freaked out but kept walking through these thick trees, wondering who or what made these unusual marks, when suddenly, out of nowhere, came this really strong smell, kind of musky and skunky at the same time. Then, right behind us somewhere, something makes a noise that sounds like grr or kind of growl and grunt sound. We froze dead in our tracks, scared beyond belief because it was pitch black out there except for our flashlights, and we had no idea what the hell that noise meant or where it came from. I whispered to Mandy, "What do you think made that sound?" She shook her head but finally managed to suggest that maybe a bear or some other animal nearby was trying to make its presence known to us. We started to slowly turn around in a circle to look at our complete surroundings when suddenly another strange thing happened. Something really big jumped up off the ground right in front of us, then quickly ran away, crashing through the underbrush. We both screamed at top of our lungs, but rationalizing that it has to be a person messing with us, because neither one of us could see what this thing looked like due to how fast it moved past. We even wondered if it was the guys playing with us. Then, just a few seconds later, there were more loud noises coming from the same area, which sounded like heavy branches being broken off trees, or possibly rocks being thrown against trunks. It was hard to tell exactly since everything seemed so chaotic and confusing at the moment it was happening. Eventually, silence fell over the forest again. I turned around and saw Mandy looking straight ahead into the darkness, without saying anything. So I asked her if she thought someone might be stalking us. She replied, "No way, there is no way anybody could move that quick." And she added that she was convinced it wasn't the guys. We decided the best course of action would be to leave the woods immediately, since things were getting creepier by the minute. But before doing so, I insisted on looking closely at the footprints first, since that's the evidence we found. Well, sure enough, we found two sets together once again side by side, going even deeper into thick wood than before. The smaller prints appeared to be about size 8 men's boots, while the larger ones still resembled bare feet, except bigger than any human could have. It became obvious someone had been walking around here wearing huge shoes. Plus, somebody else followed behind them wearing regular boots. But why? And where did they go now, since there were no more tracks after that strange incident we just experienced? We decided not to pursue it any further, since it was more than our brains could handle, plus the element of danger. We hurried back home, feeling relieved that nothing bad happened to us during our brief encounter with whatever lurked out there. Afterwards, I tried convincing myself that it must have been pranksters messing around, even though everything seemed too bizarre for such an explanation to make sense. Then, a few days later, Mandy called again, saying she had heard more weird noises coming from the woods near her house at night, and was afraid of going outside alone anymore. I offered to stay over if it made her feel safer, which she gladly accepted since her boyfriend was working a night shift and wasn't home. When my husband came home from work, I told him I was heading to Mandy's since she was too uncomfortable to stay by herself that night. He smirked at me and said something about us being two crazy chicks and to have fun. Thank goodness the evening and night was uneventful. But the next morning, before dawn broke while still dark outside, we woke up hearing loud crashing sounds close by, followed shortly thereafter by several howls echoing through the forest. It scared crap out of us, especially now that we had read online that there have been hundreds of Bigfoot sightings all across Michigan, despite the lack of evidence supporting those claims. When Mark got back from his overnight shift, he suggested contacting local authorities regarding these incidents, hoping they might shed light on what exactly went down here recently. Thank goodness he believed us. But due to the rural nature surrounding the area and the absence of real proof of anything unusual happening besides footprints and noises, police refused to take the case seriously and told us over the phone that most likely animals had caused all the commotion. In the end, nobody ever discovered the truth behind those mysterious events, nor do I think anyone ever will, unless similar circumstances occur again someday and we can get concrete proof. Thank you for taking time to read my story. I enjoy your channel immensely, especially stories that sound like mine, which remind folks that unknown mysteries still exist in the world today. Best regards, Lori. I am writing to tell you about an encounter I had at Burning Man. For those of you who are not familiar with the event, it is a week-long arts festival held in the Black Rock Desert of Nevada. It attracts around 70,000 people each year and features all kinds of art installations, performances, workshops, and other activities. It's known for its free-spirited atmosphere and anything-goes attitude. I have been attending Burning Man for several years now and have always really enjoyed the experience, to say the least. I mean, it can get really crazy out there, and you have to be prepared to be completely 100% self-sufficient. However, last year I had a very strange encounter that left me feeling uneasy. It happened on one of my late-night walks through the desert, which I like to do every night. It helped me to process the day's events. This night, I was alone and decided to explore some of the more remote areas away from the main campgrounds. The sky was this deep indigo, sprinkled with stars, and the only sound was the distant thump of bass from the raves. I remember thinking how surreal it felt, like I was walking through a dream or another dimension. Everything seemed so peaceful, so untouched, and I was just soaking it all in when I noticed something odd in the distance. It wasn't the usual kind of art installation or party crowd. It looked like, well, at first, I couldn't really tell what it was. It seemed like a tall figure, but it was too far to make out any details. It was shimmering in the desert air, and I kept losing sight of it. Curiosity got the better of me, and I started walking towards it to try and get a better look. As I got closer, the figure became clearer, and man, it was unlike anything I've ever seen at Burning Man, or anywhere else for that matter. It was this creature, standing there in the middle of the desert. It must have been at least 8 feet tall, with long, slender limbs that seemed too graceful for its size. Its skin, or whatever it was, shimmered under the moonlight, shifting colors like some kind of living opal. I stopped in my tracks, just staring at it. And of course, now I'm wondering if this is the best art experience I've ever had, or if I've teleported to another dimension. I started to go with the idea that it was some kind of elaborate puppet someone had set up, but then it moved. Not like anything mechanical or human, but smoothly, almost like it was part of the wind itself. It turned towards me, and I swear, my heart must have skipped a beat or two. Its face, if you could call it that, was featureless, except for two glowing spots where eyes should be. It felt like it was looking right into me and connecting with me. So, we're the only two out in this area, and then the creature made a soft, melodious sound, kind of like chimes mixed with a whisper. It was beautiful but eerie at the same time. I remember feeling this overwhelming sense of calm wash over me, which was weird because, let's be honest, seeing a creature like that should have sent me running for the company of other people. But I didn't run. Instead, I found myself moving closer to it. I don't know what I was thinking. Maybe I wasn't thinking at all. When I was just a few feet away, I swear it extended one of its long arms towards me. The limb was almost translucent, and as it reached for my hand, I hesitated for a moment, but then decided to take a leap of faith. The moment we touched, it was like nothing I've ever experienced. It wasn't just physical contact. It was as if I could feel its emotions, its thoughts. Images and feelings flooded my mind. Visions of places I've never seen. Stars. Galaxies. My head was exploding with images and colors. I can't even begin to describe it properly. It was overwhelming, beautiful, and terrifying all at once. Then, just as quickly as it began, the connection was broken. The creature pulled away, made that same chime whisper sound, and started to fade away, like it was becoming part of the ethers. In a blink, it was gone, leaving me standing there in the desert, all alone. I spent the rest of the night wandering back to camp, but not taking the straight path back. I needed to consider all that had just gone down. My mind was racing with a million questions. Mostly, what was that thing? And what did those visions in my head mean? I didn't sleep at all that night, and when I told a few people the next day, they actually seemed envious. I guess I can't blame them because I would feel envious too if I had heard of an intense encounter like this from someone else. It affected me deeply. I still plan to go back to Burning Man this year, hoping to see the creature again. Maybe it was a once-in-a-lifetime encounter, a glimpse into something beyond us, which is exactly what I wanted to find out there in the desert. In a way, it's like my prayers were answered, only I don't know how to take the experience and move forward with it. If any of you have suggestions on how I can use this to better my life, please let me know. I was in my late 20s, working for the state of California as a firefighter, a job that fit perfectly with my love for the outdoors. Doug, my best friend and fellow firefighter, was a kindred spirit. He lived nearby with his wife, Kathy, and despite our busy lives filled with work and family commitments, We always made time for outdoor adventures like hunting, fishing, and hiking. One day, Doug mentioned he wanted to take up photography. He proposed a trip up north to Yosemite National Park to test his new camera. And I was all in. We packed our gear, snacks, and a cooler full of drinks, and set out early from our homes in Southern California. The drive to Yosemite took about 6 hours, and we made it to the Big Oak Flat entrance on Highway 120 with no traffic delays, a welcome surprise given the approaching Memorial Day weekend. We expected the park to be bustling with visitors, but as we drove through, an eerie stillness hung in the air. The usual chatter of wildlife was conspicuously absent, and we encountered no animals along the road. Arriving at Crane Flat Campground, we found it unusually deserted. Not a soul was in sight, just rows of empty campsites. The forecast had warned of rain, typical for May in the mountains, and sure enough, it poured that afternoon, forcing us to spend the first few hours huddled in our tents. When night came, the rain paused but left a shroud of clouds behind. Sleep eventually took us, but I awoke later to a chilling chorus of howls that seemed too intense to belong to coyotes. Doug emerged from his tent, unnerved by their peculiar tone. The rain returned at dawn, heavy and unrelenting, trapping us inside our tents for the day. That's when Doug, scrolling through his camera, froze. His eyes were fixed on a photo captured the previous night. He seized my arm, pointing to the frame where, illuminated by an unknown light, stood an upright, wolf-like figure. We tried to rationalize the image as a trick of motion or light, but the persistent howls outside fed our unease. Curiosity, tinged with a hint of fear, kept us from packing up and leaving. Instead, we stayed, listening and waiting. On the third evening, the rain finally ceased, and I ventured out for a walk. The need for fresh air and a restroom break outweighed my reluctance to leave the safety of our camp. Barely 20 yards out, I noticed something stir in the trees. My flashlight revealed not wolves, but a collection of large yellow eyes, unlike any I'd seen before. Doug joined me, and together we witnessed the eerie spectacle of countless glowing eyes watching us from the darkness. We retreated to our campsite, the eyes following our every step. There must have been over 24 pairs of them, a silent audience to our unnerved whispers. The rest of the night was a blur of whispered conjectures and uneasy sleep. The following day, we were determined to investigate. The skies cleared, gifting us with a perfect opportunity to explore without the hindrance of rain. We cautiously trekked to where I had seen the eyes, but found nothing. No tracks, no signs of wildlife, just the dense, unyielding forest. It was as if the night before had been a collective hallucination. But that night, they returned, the eyes, the howls. Only this time, there was a physical presence behind the sounds, an unmistakable feeling of being watched by something intelligent, something curious. On our fifth day, the decision was made for us. A park ranger arrived at our campsite, a rare visitor in those quiet days. She told us that several campers had reported similar experiences across the park, and they were advising everyone to stay clear of the more remote areas until they figured out what was going on. Apparently, we weren't the only ones encountering these mysterious creatures. We packed up that afternoon, the strange events of the past days weighing heavily on us. As we drove out of Yosemite, we stopped at the ranger station to give a full account of what we'd seen. The rangers took notes, their faces a mix of concern and skepticism. We left Yosemite behind, but the memory of those glowing eyes stayed with us, haunting our dreams and conversations for years to come. It wasn't until much later that we heard rumors of a study revealing a rare species of nocturnal wildlife in the park. They were elusive creatures, not wolves, but something unknown to science, something that had lived in the park undetected for who knows how long. Doug and I never found out what those creatures were, but we both agreed on one thing. We had been part of something extraordinary, a brief encounter with the wild and unexplained heart of Yosemite. Oh yeah, and as far as we know now, there are no wolves within Yosemite National Park. Do you have any thoughts on that? Have you ever heard of anything like this happening before? We had this crazy thing happen a few summers ago that I still can't believe happened. We were camping in Arkansas, and two of my friends, Jackson and Billy, along with myself, were planning to meet some other friends near a waterfall that was about a mile away from our site. There was supposed to be a meteor shower, and we thought it might be a good show, especially since there was just a thin crescent moon that night. We were walking through the forest at around 11 p.m., and it was really dark. None of the three of us had a flashlight because, to be honest, it hampers your ability to see well in the dark. But Billy did have a pretty lame headlamp that was too dim to be that useful anyway. While we were walking, Jackson suddenly says he left his pocket knife back at our campsite and wanted to go back and get it since it wasn't that far. He told us he would catch up with us. Billy and I didn't think much of it, even though we were like, why do you even need a pocket knife right now? But Jackson was always weird like that, so we shrugged it off and kept going. Well, Jackson is kind of a jerk, and he actually fibbed to us so that he could sneak ahead and scare the crap out of us, which he succeeded at. He about gave us a heart attack when he jumped out from behind a tree. After we calmed down and roughed him up a bit, we got back on track. But then Jackson had another oh crap moment and realized he hadn't put his food away before leaving our site. He said it made him too paranoid to think of it, just sitting out inviting animals to our site. Plus, he was sure a raccoon was going to get it or something. Billy and I were kind of skeptical and thought he isn't really going to try to pull the same crap twice, is he? Which he was not. So Jackson frantically sprints back toward our site and me and Billy just kept going. After about 10 minutes, we were nearing the waterfall, but the forest got kind of thick and hard to navigate in that particular area. We approached a curve in the trail, and suddenly Billy grabbed my arm and made me stop without saying a word. He shushed me and directed my attention toward the bend, which was maybe 30 feet ahead of us. Just beside the bend, there was an unmistakable outline of a person. They were crouched next to some bushes, giving the impression of hiding. So our immediate assumption was it must be Jackson. We were whispering and trying to decide if we should just rush up there and tackle him. But we decided to just ruin his fun, so we could hurry up and go see the meteor shower. We just casually walked toward him, shouting, "You're real sneaky, Jack. We definitely can't see you." As soon as I said this, the silhouette stood up. I was like, "Why don't you just stop with this nonsense?" The silhouette turned and faced me and Billy. It felt weird. It was a creepy sensation. Jackson would have just stopped at that point. And on top of that, this person had not said a word yet, while the two of us had been taunting him. Again, neither of us had a good light, so we couldn't actually see any details. We slowed our approach slightly and started saying things like, "Dude, quit messing around and come on. We need to hurry up." At this point, the silhouette starts coming out of the foliage. He starts at a very slow walk and is slowly increasing his pace. Billy and I stop walking and are getting totally creeped out at this point. "Jackson, that's you, right?" No response. It starts to pick up its pace to a speed walk. "Jackson, stop it. This isn't funny, dude." It picks its pace up a bit more to a bit of a light jog. We can hear its footsteps, and it's coming right at us. We start to panic. Billy pulls out his pocket knife and is screaming, "Jackson, freaking stop. I have my knife." At that point, the figure had picked up the pace to a full-on sprint. Billy is screaming bloody murder, and I'm frozen in fear. We don't know who or what the hell this thing is. At the last moment, when this figure was within about 10 feet, I realized I had my lighter on me. I pulled it out and flicked it, and nothing. Whatever was coming toward us literally disappeared. We were both in shock. Billy literally had tears running down his face. I was completely frozen and couldn't even react. Billy turns and grabs me screaming, "What the hell was that?" But I had no idea and couldn't even talk because of shock. We just turned around and got the hell out of there. Billy and I literally ran the mile in the dark forest and managed to make it back to our site. Jackson was there asleep on top of his sleeping bag. Me and Billy stayed up most of the night together just trying to stop feeling terrified. To this day, that is the only thing that has ever happened to me that I can't possibly think of any logical explanation. But weeks later, we heard about this legend that told of a Native American man being killed in that area. It tells that he was running from one of his tribe's settlements to another and went past a tribe that they were at war with. Supposedly, his spirit is still running through the forest. Billy and I have talked about it now and then, but we don't really like to. It was one of the scariest and most confusing moments of my life. Ever since I was a kid, those woods behind my grandmother's old cottage in Massachusetts have always had an eerie allure to them. The locals used to say the place was haunted, filled with old tales of settlers, witches, and even sightings of strange creatures. I never gave it much thought, always dismissing them as mere campfire stories. I had been coming back to that cottage every summer, ever since I could remember, and nothing ever happened to validate those stories. The day before the incident, I had driven down to the cottage after a tiring week at the office in Boston. It was meant to be a weekend of relaxation. The plan was simple: hike, read, and maybe even catch up on some writing. That morning, the woods seemed particularly inviting. Apparently, I needed this trip away from the city. So, with a light pack and my old boots, I had set out to hike a familiar trail, one I had walked countless times in my life. So when I first heard that chilling scream, it threw all my senses into disarray. It was not like the sound of the birds or the rustling of the leaves. This was human. I felt it sounded like a woman screaming, shrieking, wailing. I know that foxes can sound similar, but let me tell you, this wasn't a fox. And I really think that there's something in us that tells us to run toward a scream like that. Something in our animal programming wants to check on whatever might be out there. We want to help in whatever way we can. And when I heard the scream again, I was sure there were words in there this time. But it was a language I couldn't quite understand. I was convinced that somewhere among the trees, a woman was in pain. It had to be severe, I thought. It had to be life or death. And I mean that quite literally. Only something at the end of its rope could make a sound like that. At least that's what all my instincts were saying. Those instincts in my training took over that day. I was a volunteer EMT for a few summers, and the urge to respond quickly and definitively never really left me. So I ran into the woods. I left the marked trail I was on that morning, and I sprinted into the brush. It was easy to ignore the wet scratches of the branches on my forearms and face while that screaming was drawing me forward. It was stupid. I must have lost my way in the first few minutes. I was convinced I was doing the right thing, though. I thought I was saving someone's life. A batch of thorns grabbed my ankle and I crashed into the earth. I rolled and skidded, my embarrassing tumble only obscured by the thick mist that was permeating between the trees. Worse than the humiliation, the screaming had stopped. It was suddenly dead quiet. There were a few birds in the trees, sure, but there was no sound like human life. At first, I thought that meant the worst. I thought I was too late. But then the shape appeared. It stood like a man, climbing upright to about 6 feet. The silhouette it cut, also obscured by the veil of mist, appeared to be naked. I took a cautious step back. This wasn't the person I'd been looking for. I can't explain it, but I knew that I was looking at something else. Even when the blurry shape of its jaw extended, and another of those screams came out, I knew it wasn't the person I'd run into the woods to save. This was something else. This was a monster of some kind, and I'd stumbled into its trap. I'd say it ran at me then, but the truth is it galloped. It fell to all fours, narrowly landing on its hands and feet, before it would have hit the ground. As it ran toward me, I ran away. If I was moving fast to save someone else's life, I'd now turned into a track star to save my own. I leapt over the thorns that had grabbed me and ducked under the branches that had scratched my face. Nothing was going to slow me down. I risked a glance over my shoulder when I heard the monster get tangled in the thorns. It looked human all right, hairless and feral, but human nonetheless. If only it had moved like a man. Watching it for just a second while it wrestled with the brush, I saw its worst feature of all. Its skin didn't move with its body. The sharp angles of bones pushed up against its flesh when it turned. The skin adjusted a moment thereafter, like a shirt being straightened out on someone's chest. I realized that thinking of it as human was a mistake. It was wearing human, that's all. It was pretending to be one, like a spider disguised as an ant. I was the lucky insect. I kept moving. The humanish grunts and whines coming from behind me became increasingly bestial. Soon it sounded like there was a mountain lion breathing down my neck. I heard jaws snapping so loudly that it was hard to imagine the human-shaped mouth and teeth making the sound at all. I heard it heaving hot air and spit as it panted and tried to catch up. I thought it had me. Prayers and goodbyes were rolling silently through my head like the credits after a movie. Then I broke through the wall of trees and arrived back on the trail. I collided with the chest of another hiker, who grabbed me in his arms and then turned to the rest of his group for aid. There were three of them there waiting for me. They'd heard the screaming and stopped to investigate themselves. When it had turned into the roars of a lion, they hesitated. I was lucky for that. I was lucky they had more self-preservation than me. If there were any fewer of them, or if they had stumbled into the trees, I don't know what would have happened. On that day, at least, the monster chasing me gave up. It either did want to deal with all four of us, or it didn't want a group to leave the woods knowing its secrets. When it was just me, there was still room for doubt, and doubt they did. They called it an episode of mine before sending a team into the trees to investigate. They said their findings were inconclusive, even though they admitted to seeing two pairs of human tracks in the woods. At first, I didn't mind the job. It was 2002 and it was pretty good money for this part of Kansas. Also, it was close to my hometown, which made the drive easier. It was only a 20-minute drive out to the restaurant where I worked on the outskirts of town, in a sort of industrial area. The area was surrounded by trees, which made it kind of dark and creepy. The clientele ranged from truckers who stopped in for coffee on their way through town to loggers who were just getting off work. The bar looked like most others in this part of Kansas, pretty run down and seedy. It seemed that the only thing the place had going for it was the fact that it stayed open late. They were open from dinner time until 2 in the morning most nights, and 24 hours a day until late Saturday night, or basically 2 a.m. on Sunday. I had been there a few hours at this point, and it was pretty slow, so that day I had been spending most of my time behind the bar reading a copy of The Purpose-Driven Life that I had gotten from one of the customers the night before. Most patrons were regulars, local men who drank there, just about every night of the week. After about an hour passed and it still wasn't very busy, so I decided to go back into the kitchen where I was washing some glasses and plates that were I had been avoiding in the sink. When I came back out into the bar a few minutes later, one of my regulars was sitting on his usual bar stool. He was a lumberjack type of guy, tall and burly, but as nice as can be, or as my grandma always said, as red as the mud on my boots. His name was Charles, and he had a big bushy mustache and long hair and always wore jeans and flannel shirts. Well, I got behind the bar and instantly I could see that he looked bothered. He was looking around the bar kind of frantically asking, "Did you see it?" I asked him if he was okay, and when he didn't respond and just kept looking around frantically, I got a little freaked out. It's like he was having an episode or something, like his brain sort of wasn't fully there. And that's when I looked to my right and saw the back door of the place wide open. I knew it wasn't open when I had just been back there washing the dishes, and I hadn't seen anyone else go back there, which gave me actual goosebumps. Charles was now fixated on the back room, so I moved over and started to look back there myself. And that's when I saw a huge brownish, orangish, dog-like creature just standing there in the doorway. It just stood there staring at me and me back at it. Our eyes had locked and our bodies were still as we both checked each other out. The staring contest lasted for what seemed like forever, until finally it looked over at Charles. Breaking my gaze with the creature caused it to growl and hiss at us both, and then it turned around, ran out the back door and off into the woods. The creature was really big, maybe 7 or 8 feet tall, and it looked like a dog standing there on two legs. The thing's face looked more like an ape than a dog, with kind of yellowish eyes and human-like teeth. First glance, it looked like a dog. But as I stared in disbelief, my eyes clearly saw that this dog was really something different. What stood in front of me was more like a dog or an ape hybrid or something. I was so terrified when I was standing there that I couldn't move. After what seemed like forever, Charles, who had been staring in disbelief at the creature too, finally snapped out of it. He stood up from his bar stool and pulled a gun out of his jacket pocket and headed out the back door. And that's when I did something I'll never be able to explain. When he walked out the back door, I grabbed a flashlight and followed him. Something inside me told me to follow him. Go out there and see what was happening. There isn't even a word in the English language to describe how terrified I was as we walked out that door and towards the woods, and yet I still went. Looking back, I have no idea what possessed me to do it. As we looked around the outside of the back door, we saw what appeared to be dog paw tracks pacing back and forth just outside the door. It's as if it had been inspecting us, just watching us for a while before opening the door and coming inside. Charles suddenly seemed to calm down and started to talk about how these creatures have been sighted in those woods for years, and that sightings go back all the way to the 1800s. His family has been in the area for generations, so I totally believe him. We walked towards the woods, and not before long we could hear something, or someone moving through the woods. We stopped and looked at each other. To me, it sounded like an animal making contact with leaves and sticks, like it was walking through the brush, but moving quickly. We followed the sounds, which took us down into this sort of dip in the land where rainwater creates a small ditch. Charles suddenly put his finger up to his mouth and shushed me, pointing down. I followed his finger, and there, standing about 100 feet from us, was the dog man. It was standing down from us, just looking around slowly, with its head tilted kind of sideways. Standing there and looking at this creature was the most terrifying experience of my life, hands down. It looked like a dog standing on its hind legs, but at the same time, it wasn't a dog at all. I don't know how else to explain it except that is, was a dog, but not a dog, yet still a dog that also looked like a human. I think the human part mainly came from the shape of its arms and legs and torso, but also from its eyes that seemed to be able to talk to me without its mouth moving or saying anything. Honestly, like nothing I've ever experienced in my life. And then the creature just turned and looked at us, and then it moved. It darted towards us and then turned in an instant and ran off into the woods, howling like a wolf as it ran. Charles and I stood there forever, it seemed, just looking at its tracks in the ground leading off to where it had gone. Charles looked at me and said, "We should probably go back." He was smart to not want to follow it into the woods, into its territory, and so we went back. "You were right to not follow it," I said as I started to dial 911, but then stopped before the call connected. What if they don't believe me? I wondered out loud. What if they think our story is fake? So I never did call the police, but I never forgot or got over that creature either. I never told anyone about what happened that night until now, with my writing this to you. To be honest, when I look back on it, I really don't know what we saw that night, like what exactly it was. Charles and I kept in touch for a while, but when I stopped working at the restaurant, our contact dropped off. I don't know how he's doing, but I sometimes think about trying to find him and see how he is. What I do know is that it was real, and its image will never leave me. It's literally in my head, behind my eyes. As I write these words to you, I can see it all the time. Honestly, I can just close my eyes and see it exactly like it was that night. And sometimes when the lights are out at night, I swear I can feel someone watching me from the foot of my bed. Have any of you had these similar experiences? I had a strange encounter during one of my camping trips a few years ago. Thought it might be worth sharing. This one particular night of stargazing and solitude turned into an experience I've struggled to wrap my mind around ever since. I've always been a sucker for wilderness and solitude, thrived on it even. The adrenaline rush from being in a remote, desolate place, it just rejuvenates me. I guess that's why I took off that weekend in November, heading up to the Manistee National Forest in Michigan. All I wanted was to sit by a crackling fire, eat canned beans, and wake up with the brisk morning air in my lungs. Just me in the wilderness. I remember finding this absolutely serene spot by the edge of a dense thicket, right next to the Manistee River. The view itself was enough to make up for the four-hour drive. I spent the afternoon setting up camp, collecting firewood, rigging up my old tent, just immersing myself in the simple labor that wilderness demanded. It was a clear night. You could see every star in the sky. I managed a decent campfire, kept myself warm with an old camping jacket, and survived on canned beans and crackers that I had carried. Beautiful simplicity, if you ask me. I zipped up the tent after dousing the fire, and I don't remember how long it took for sleep to wash over me. Probably not too long. The fatigue after a busy day always ensures a good night's sleep. Now, while I love camping and all, you've got to understand, the wilderness can play some weird tricks on you. Your mind suddenly becomes hyper-alert about every rustling leaf, every breeze, every solitary hoot in the distance. Usually, I treat it as a part of the adventure. Little did I know that night was going to be wildly different than my usual adventures. Finally nodding off after some tossing and turning, I remember being jerked back to consciousness in the early twilight hours. I still had my doubts if it was real or just a dream. There was this guttural noise, not too far from my tent. It was an echoing low moan, a mix of a growl and a guttural grunt. It was a sound I've never heard before, and believe me, I have heard all sorts of animal and bird calls during my camping trips throughout the years. This sound, it felt primeval, ancient even. Now, it wasn't too menacing, but definitely put me on edge. Shrugging it off as some forest animal, I told myself I need to get used to it if I wanted to continue camping out so often. I kept lying there, waiting for sleep to claim me again, wondering what could make such a bizarre noise. My mind dared not wander towards thoughts of the unknown. Dozing off, I remembered, I forgot to cover up the rest of the canned beans. Figuring some scavenger had sniffed it out in the middle of the night, I drifted back to an uneasy slumber. Unknown to me, the real surprise awaited when dawn broke. As the first light of dawn crept in, I could hear the chirping of birds outside my tent, their melody strangely comforting after the eerie sounds from the previous night. Still groggy from the unexpected wake-up call, I stepped out of my tent. The morning was beautiful, the mist from the river floating in lazy spirals. As I was working the sleep out of my eyes, something caught my attention. There were these massive footprints circling around my campsite. They were easily about 16, 17 inches long and much wider than any human foot. The shape was hard to define in the morning light, but they had deep imprints. The creature who made them was heavy. The shape appeared human. There seemed to be the outline of toes. That sight, it rooted me to the spot, the echo of that sound from the night ringing again in my ears. Feeling a shiver, I approached the remains of last night's fire, half the logs knocked over, my forgotten bean can crushed as if run over by a truck. The grunts from the night, the footprints. I tried reconciling it with a bear, maybe. But deep within, I knew this was unlike any bear behavior I've heard of. A dread was sinking in, almost choking me with nerves. With heart pounding in my chest, I decided I couldn't stay. As much as I loved the call of the wild, this was just too much. Made my blood run cold. Hastily wrapping up my camping gear, I left that can of beans there. A quiet marker of a night I couldn't forget, even if I tried. I wasn't sure what had visited my campsite that night. On my drive home, my mind wrestled with questions I didn't have answers to. Was it a bear? Did the darkness and my imagination turn a simple scavenger into something more ominous? Or was there really something out there, lurking in the thickets of Manistee Forest? The footprints, the dreadful sounds that had punctuated the stillness, the shattered remnants of my campsite, all of it felt so real, so tangible, and yet unbelievable. I think I know what made those prints, but I'm almost afraid to admit it to myself. The mystery of those colossal footprints and uncanny sounds didn't keep me away from the wilderness. But every so often on a solitary camping night, around the glow of the campfire, I find my mind drifting back to that November morning in Manistee Forest, filled with an unnerving mix of apprehension and intrigue. It happened during one of my graveyard shifts at the museum. It's an older building, smack in the heart of Manhattan. It was originally built sometime in the 1800s. They've done a lot to it since then, but the bones are original. I'm the night security guard. It's not a glamorous job, but it pays my bills, and I've come to enjoy the quiet times of the night. It's kind of cool the way the artifacts stand frozen in time under the exhibit lights. Almost peaceful in a way, I worked the 10 to 6 shift. Every night was pretty much the same. I made my rounds through the same hallways, same exhibit, same still lifes. I don't remember anything out of the ordinary happening ever. That is, until one night. It was a normal Wednesday for me. I just finished my fourth cup of coffee for the night. I had adjusted to the night shift, but I still needed coffee to keep me up on those quiet nights. As I walked through the darkened hallways, flashlight in hand, I noticed something strange. The door to the Mesozoic exhibit was ajar. The exhibit was one of the newer additions to the museum, a sprawling showcase of fossilized creatures from the prehistoric era. It was usually tightly sealed off when I arrived. The afternoon staff always shut everything down for the day before they left, but that night, the door was open just a crack. I hesitated at first, but duty called, more scared of my boss than a potential ghost. I approached the entrance, praying that a clumsy cleaner had just forgotten to close the door. I nudged it open with my boot, the creak of the rusty hinges echoing down the corridor. As I stepped inside, my flashlight fell on a sight that made my blood run cold. The center exhibit, a massive T-Rex skeleton, was vandalized. Its jawbone had been forcefully removed, scattered bone fragments lying far and wide. I just stood there in shock at first, not knowing what to think. Not only was it an irreplaceable artifact, but it was damn heavy. It would take at least a couple of people to do this. And there was no one else here. I remember my heart racing, thumping fast in my chest as I ventured further into the exhibit. I reached into my pocket for my walkie-talkie. I intended to inform my partner on the lower floor about the weird situation. I was interrupted by a strange metallic click. It was repetitive, like chattering teeth. Chills ran down my spine and I froze in my tracks. I scanned the room with my flashlight. The sound seemed to be coming from this one dark corner, but I couldn't see anything there. At least not at first. I was pretty frightened at that point. I called out and asked, "Who's there?" but received no answer. I swallowed my fear, tightened my grip on my flashlight, and ventured deeper into the exhibit to see what I could find. I was never really creeped out by the museum, but the light from above was casting long shadows, making the fossils seem like they were coming back to life. The clicking sound suddenly intensified. It was like someone was typing furiously on one of those old-fashioned typewriters. My breath hitched. There was something in the room with me. I was hoping it was maybe some strange piece of tech for the exhibit that was malfunctioning, but something deep inside me knew that it wasn't. There was something in here and I was pretty sure it was dangerous. I was frozen in sheer terror. This wasn't worth it. I liked my job well enough, but I wasn't about to get into a confrontation here on my own. I told myself that all I had to do was to get through the exhibit hall and to the emergency exit. I could call for backup and everything would be fine, but I needed to get out of there first. I pushed myself flat against the wall, trying to blend into the shadows. That's when my companion finally made an appearance. It stepped out of the shadows and into the beam of my flashlight. I'd like to say I didn't scream, but fear makes liars of us all. Its appearance was somehow both familiar and alien at the same time. It was bipedal and roughly the same size as a man, but there was nothing human about the way the creature moved. The limbs were incredibly long, bending in odd places. It appeared like it could walk, but it was hunched over and crawling instead. The creature was disturbingly skinny, almost skeletal, with skin so pale it seemed to glow in the dark. Eyes as large and dark as the blackest night stared back at me, void of any warmth or human understanding. The clicking noises were coming from its mouth. I won't lie. I took one look and I ran. All that mattered to me was creating distance between myself and that thing. The flashlight dropped from my grasp, plunging the room into darkness. I could hear the creature in pursuit, its clicking growing louder, echoing around the exhibit. Running blindly in the dark, I crashed into displays and stumbled over debris, but I didn't stop. I knew the museum layout by heart, but in sheer panic, everything felt alien. After a grueling eternity, I felt the cold metal door of the fire exit. Pushing through it, I was out in the open, the cold night air stinging my lungs. As the sun rose, I found myself still sitting on the sidewalk, shocked. The bizarre encounter had left me speechless. I had my phone and my radio on me, but I still hadn't called anyone. What would I even say? Maybe I had hallucinated the whole thing. The vandalized exhibit was evidence enough that it was real. Something did that. There was no way around it. But my brain was unwilling to accept it. Returning to work the next night felt like a cruel joke. The fear was still fresh. I surprised myself that I even went back. I was haunted by the memory of the creature. What was it doing in the museum that night? How did it get there? What did it want? And more importantly, where on earth did it go? I remember it clear as day. I can still picture the golden sand spread across the horizon in the fading sun. I was in the middle of a long road trip, and as the miles ticked by on that long desert road, I found myself pulling into the infamous Roswell for the night. It wasn't one of my planned stops, but I was running a little behind, and I wasn't much for driving after dark, so I figured this was as good a place as any to find some accommodations. There was something undeniably strange about the place. I'm not sure if I was put off by its reputation, or if there was really something strange in the air. I parked the car at a remote spot on the outskirts of the town, right in the belly of the desert. I was hoping to get a few photos of the sunset before I went into town to find a room. Maybe not the best plan, but there is something magical about desert sunsets, and I didn't want to miss it. The skies seem bigger here than in other parts of the US. I unpacked my camera. It wasn't anything fancy, just an entry-level DSLR, but I had a little tripod with me, and I was putting it together. As the sun began to sink below the horizon, I remember feeling the grit of the sand underneath my feet and the dry wind sweeping past me. But it was the vast darkening sky that had me completely spellbound. It was like the colors of the sunset were dancing like ocean waves. I could see them move in the sky, and then all of a sudden, it was dark. It's difficult to explain, but I felt like I was in an illusion or something. It didn't feel real. In the not too far distance, I heard a coyote's cry echo across the sands. Another responded and a shiver ran down my spine. The air was cold now. That happens in the desert. It's hot as hell during the day, but as soon as the sun goes down, it's practically freezing. The solitude of the desert was as eerie as it was liberating. I remember thinking to myself how it felt like I was the last person on Earth, surrounded by nothing but miles and miles of barren land, speckled with cacti and other hardy desert plants. I captured a few photos of the moon's ascent before I switched up my lens to a wide angle to catch a wide sweep of the sky. That's when I saw it. There was a slow-moving, indistinct object in the sky above me. I had initially brushed it off as a plane, but there was something strange about the way it moved. It glided with a fluidity that seemed unnatural to me. I decided to capture it on camera just for fun. I had all my camera gear out, so why not? I snapped a couple of photos of the object, and just as soon as I did, it changed course abruptly. Stunned, my heart pounded in my chest as I watched it zigzagging across the night sky, its movements completely defying the laws of physics as I knew them. I was worried that my camera did something to cause its erratic movements, but that wasn't possible. Whatever it was, it probably didn't even see me down here. It took me a moment to realize what I was looking at. I had forgotten where I was, what town I was in, and what it was famous for. I squinted, trying to make out more details as it descended lower. The UFO was saucer-shaped and had a metallic sheen that reflected the moonlight. It almost looked like it was glowing. There were lights, too, rotating along the edge of the vehicle. The lights alternated between green and red and yellow. The UFO made no noise, at least that I could hear. I couldn't see where the engines were or what was propelling it, or, for that matter, how it was being steered around the sky. Nothing about it made a lick of sense. Then, as abruptly as it altered its course, it stopped right over me. It hovered there, silent and intimidating, casting a giant shadow over the desert floor. It was the most otherworldly and awe-inspiring experience I'd ever had, but, and I have to admit it, I was terrified. I was honestly afraid it was going to abduct me. I've heard stories of that happening, you know, and it doesn't sound like much fun. I raised my camera to capture it. I figured if it was going to take me that I could at least leave some evidence behind for whoever manages to find my gear. But then the UFO shot straight up into the sky at an impossible speed and disappeared. One moment it was there, and the next it wasn't. Nothing but the wide open sky remained. The feeling that washed over me was of awe and confusion, my mind struggling to comprehend what my eyes had just witnessed. It was quite a while before I mustered the courage to pack my equipment and head back to my car. The drive to the motel in town was a blur, my mind still reeling from the encounter. Was it real? Did I imagine it? Was it some secret military experiment? Or was it an actual craft from another galaxy? There was no way for me to tell. I've since wrestled with the implications of what I saw that night. In the grand scheme of things, the encounter was brief, yet it changed me in ways I couldn't have anticipated. It opened my mind to the idea that we might not be alone in this universe. To this day, I'm not sure if it was a trick of the desert night, or if I actually saw a UFO that night.